Hello and welcome back to the Let's Talk Thyroid podcast. It's been a bit of a break for a couple of months, really, because I did a few little short episodes over Christmas, January. But I'm back from my three-week holiday, back from having a break after my son Charlie broke his arm. And so I just wanted to say thank you for your patience. Maybe those of listeners, you've gone back and re-listened to a few episodes that you might have missed or really wanted to listen to again. But the plan from here is just to be a little bit more flexible with when I release the podcast interviews and podcasts. And so when I have a great guest, we're going to do a podcast and I'll release them. And so it won't be the same pattern that it was in the past, but I'll come to you when I've got some great information to share with you. Like today for episode 119, I am having a chat with Donna Monthe all around gut health. And if you are listening to this and you have an autoimmune condition and a thyroid condition, 99% you have a gut condition or have had if you haven't resolved it properly. So I just, I think we talk about gut not all the time, obviously, on this show, but it is a recurring theme because it is such an important key health piece to our thyroid health journey. So I would like to introduce you to Donna. She's a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and founder of Ever Vital. I love that name, Ever Vital. We want to be ever vital, don't we? Nutrition, she's the creator of the Complete Gut Fix program, and maybe that will be for you by the time you've listened to this conversation and you'll realize that your gut needs a fix. As a gut health expert, Donna has 20 plus years experience of working with hundreds of people with chronic gut symptoms to help them poop like champions, so that you can probably expect a bit of poo talk on the podcast today. Like so many of my guests, she has her own Hashimoto's story and gut health story, and so I'm definitely going to get her to talk about that. I think it's important to understand that, the people that I bring onto the show, 95% have their own experience, speaking from their own experience as well as clinical experience as well. And so I think that really helps to connect. It makes you realize that in this case, Donna, knows what she's talking about. She's lived it. She's had to implement the, strategies on her own as well. Aside from that, she's got two 20-something boys, so similar-ish to my age boys, a little tiny, little bit older. So, yes, they probably are men now. And she lives in Austin, Texas. She's a bit of a digital nomad during the hot summer months and loves to be active with hiking, strength training, yoga, and cycling. So welcome, Donna, to the Let's Talk Thyroid podcast.
Thank you so much, Annabelle. I'm thrilled to be here.
So, Donna, we said in the intro that you come with your own Hashimoto's story, your own gut health story. Maybe give us a little bit of a walk through your health story as much as you would like to share with us to help us understand where you're coming from and how you got to be helping people just like you regain control of their health.
Sure. So the Hashis was first for me. The trigger was the birth of my second son. And I didn't really know a lot about it at the time. I just knew that I was losing hair, gaining weight, cold all the time. And so I went through what a lot of your listeners go through, trying to diagnose what's going on with me. I never had a weight problem. Really, it just wasn't something that I suffered with in my life. And so for me, adding on 10 or 20 pounds, is a lot. And so I went the conventional medicine route and, went to an endocrinologist, went to 7 endocrinologists. All of them tested my TSH, said it was normal. I'm fine, and sent me out the door.
Just pause for a sec, Donna?
Sure.
You said
sure.
7 endocrinologists.
Seven. Yeah,
I think actually that's the average statistic, is that people will take on average 7, maybe not necessarily endocrinologists, that's even worse, but 7 health professionals to be diagnosed.
Oh, so really? Okay, yeah. Well, then I'm normal.
If you think 7 endocrinologists, that's worse than just a combination of general practitioners and,
Right. Somebody should have run more than a TSH. Buffin one. And the 7th one was kind of the trigger for me to explore other avenues, because she's an MD and well-respected MD in town. And I went in there, I was already a dietitian, so I was familiar with the whole, you know, food and exercise thing. So I was in her office and I was explaining what was going on. And at that point I had gained, I don't know, 10 pounds or something. And like I said, that was really out of the norm for me. And so I was explaining this to her and she said, well, you just need to eat less and move more. And I said, well, I understand that's probably the situation with a lot of people, but I'm a registered dietitian. I've been logging my food. You know, I'm taking this approach, a scientific approach. And she said to me, if you think you're so smart, you should go to medical school and heal yourself. And so,
wow,
you know, shocked, flabbergasted. I got up and left the office, but then it was like, okay, well, who's going to help me here? Who's going to be able to determine what's going on? And so at that point, I found a functional medicine doctor. They did the full thyroid panel. I had antibiotics out the roof. And so I got that Hashi's diagnosis then. Some adjustment with the meds, you know, how that goes at the beginning. You're trying to find really which meds are going to work for you. And then they switch you from Natrathroid to something else. And that changes. And so a little, you know, some bumps in the road there. But I got it nailed down eventually. And then I was just kind of cruising along, no problem.
And how long did that take you, Donna? Like how long did
that?
A while,
actually. You know, it was a while.
Like a few years?
Probably about a year, I would say.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful for people to understand because you think, oh, I'm going to go on meds and, you know, if you are listening and you're newly diagnosed, it may take quite some time to find the right style of medication, the right dosage. Yeah. And everything takes 6 weeks to kind of kick in. So it's not a quick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so also like in the States, if you go get your whatever prescription, they can switch around the manufacturers. Well, there's difference. There's a difference in one company versus the next. They're manufacturing, you know, how strict they are and all of that. And so
it's the same here.
So it kind of messes
with
it's
a different system, but it's easy to turn up to the pharmacy and then they give you something that's not what you thought you were asking. Yeah. So it's similar.
And it's it's equivalent to them, but it's not the same to your body sometimes.
Correct.
And so it's a little bumpy road, a little rocky on the way to figuring out kind of where you are. And really you have to advocate for yourself with the pharmacy and say, I don't want this brand. I want this brand. If you don't have that brand in, I'm going to go to a different pharmacy and really just, you know, keeping things as consistent for your body as possible. So you can truly figure out if that's working for you or not.
Okay. So you took a little while to, you know, to get settled. Then you were in kind of in a groove for a while. Did something happen?
I was in a groove and it almost seemed like I didn't have a thyroid problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was fantastic. My hair filled out and everything, you know, it was good. I felt great. I felt fantastic. Until about 6 years ago, my dentist prescribed two different antibiotics for me for a dental problem. As you might imagine, totally wiped out my gut, right? And I actually ended up with SIBO. So before that, I hadn't really explored the gut side of things from the dietitian perspective. Since then, I have, of course. So symptom-wise, at that point, you know, I took the medications as prescribed. And 3-4 weeks later, weight gain. This time it was about 20 pounds, lots of hair loss, all the hypo symptoms. And I was like, what's going on here? And so what happens in the case of poor gut health, whether it's something like SIBO or IBS or an overgrowth or parasites or whatever, your meds aren't absorbed properly. And so there's that whole cascade of events there. And then you can end up with nutrient deficiencies. You can end up with hormonal imbalances. You can end up with, you know, all sorts of things. And it's all interconnected here to the gut. For me, I always approach things from the gut out. I told my friends I was turning into a bald, fat man. It was so not how those prior years had been for me as a Hashi's patient. You know, kind of rolling along, everything fine and dandy. And all of a sudden, one thing, or seemingly one thing, just throws such a wrench in my system. I also had all the GI symptoms, you know, bloating, diarrhea, skin rash, motility change. Everything was just completely messed up just from antibiotics. And interestingly, I was also newly divorced and trying to date during all of this. And so it was just, it was a mess.
A bit awkward.
And my body was a mess. So, so kind of in a nutshell, that's how I got to where I am. The hashies came first, and then the gut issues came after that. And since then, I've been working with people, not specifically with thyroid issues, but people with chronic gut issues, lots of which have usually as hashies. So that's kind of how I got here.
And it is. I mean, we don't tend to end up wanting to be in this space and help other people when we haven't suffered through it ourselves. I mean, that's just, I think you think, well, some of the suffering's got to have purpose and, you know, be able to benefit other people and hopefully mean that other people don't suffer in the same ways. I mean, everyone has their own journey, but yeah, if we can help people a little bit, that would be good.
Don't you feel though, like, that you're able to better help people and connect in a really unique way, having dealt with those? Think of, you were a child, but you pre, thyroid issues, it's just a different level of understanding. When someone says to me, oh, I've had diarrhea for a month, I'm like, I know what that's like. You know, you really can, envision and remember, take yourself back to that same point where it was like, oh, I remember how, you know, upset I was to lose my hair.
I mean, I remember some of those things. Like, I mean, my hair, I didn't lose like handfuls of hair, but for me, my hair was thinning. It was very brittle and dry, frizzy. When I look back, it looked terrible. but for me, I think because it had all happened so gradually over such a, through those teenage years, it was hard to know. I didn't really have a before and an after, because you think, well, I'm growing up. You don't really, you just think, oh, well, this is just the way it is. But I think, yeah, I do remember the muscle fatigue. That was probably, that was the thing that I couldn't hold my hands up to actually blow dry my hair. And I think, okay, that's, I don't think that's normal.
No.
I think I should be able to hold my arm up for long enough to blow dry my hair, whatever there is of it. It was long back then. And so, yes, you do. You know, even though I was young, I don't remember all of the things, but in terms of the end point, I was in my early 20s, so I remember a lot of that. So, Donna, in terms of, you know, you said you work with people with gut health, and some of them, a lot of them, probably have thyroid conditions, but not all exclusively. You know, there is that gut thyroid, you know, connection. Can you explain that?
Yes.
Like, what's connection between gut health and, or maybe even it's more autoimmunity more broadly? Like, what, you know, what would you see the connection between those are?
So, from my perspective, the gut is connected to really all of our body systems. Just backing up a step and thinking about the gut itself for a minute, the gut is, you know, basically a long series of tubes with some solid organs, and that's our pancreas, our liver, and our gallbladder, and all of these things work together for our digestion. Within our long tubes, we've got communities of organisms. I like to think of them as a garden that we have to nurture, right? There's certain bugs in there. We want the good ones in there. We don't want the bad ones in there. And the gut is very simplistically similar to that, right? Okay. So we got our tubes, we got our organs, we got our communities of bugs. And so this system, our gut, is responsible for many, many processes in the body, nutrient absorption, obviously, production of some of our vitamins, production of certain substances. We call them metabolites. They're metabolically active substances that are required for certain metabolic processes. It really just influences the development and the maintenance of the immune system, I tell my patients, you know, that a big part of their immune system is in their gut, not technically like, but it works, it all works together that way. So the gut and immunity are really closely connected. There's a lot of other factors that this is really an emerging area, gut health in general. Like it's so fascinating to be in this field because there's something new always. There's always a new paper and they haven't even named all of our organisms yet, right? But they are finding that certain species can influence the way that the thyroid works by a bunch of things, vitamins, iron, absorption, selenium we know is important. And certain bacteria are responsible for activating the immune system. And not sure exactly why or how or which ones or all of that, but we do know that there is a connection. So what do I see in patients as far as this connection goes? I start everybody with a gut microbiome test. It's just a simple stool test. And that tells us kind of who's in there, you know, which bugs are in there, as well as how those organs that I mentioned, pancreas, liver, gallbladder, are functioning, right? Are they doing their job? Are they producing enough digestive enzymes, bile? What's our stomach acid like? All of that is part of how the gut works and that connection with then how well the thyroid works, right? So I use the testing for that. We also see a lot of interesting things. We see levels of detox. So we think of our liver as responsible for detox, but really that happens with the gut's influence. And so something that goes through that detox pathway is excess thyroid hormones. So for the people with Graves' disease or hyperthyroidism, if they can't eliminate those extra hormones, those excess hormones, then they end up, you know, with a bigger problem there related to the gut's inability to detox.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last thing is that certain bacteria produce harmful substances, endotoxins, toxins we call them. A big one is something called LPS, lipopolysaccharide. And when the gut lining isn't optimal, there are larger spaces for things to get through. We call this leaky gut. When leaky gut is present and LPS is present or other harmful toxins, those substances, LPS, we'll just use that one as an example. LPS can squeeze through the gut lining. And this is often what the trigger is for autoimmune disease related to the gut, related to gut health. And so what we see with that is, of course, Hashi's and Graves. We see lupus. We see rheumatoid arthritis a lot, sometimes celiac disease, IBD. And there's even some studies out fairly recently, they're connecting potentially type 1 diabetes and MS with gut health.
Well, it was interesting because years ago I read Dr. David Perlmutter's book, The Brain Drain. No, is that what it's called? Brain Drain? Yeah. And he, in that book, he says, in that book, he says that every single autoimmune disease that has been studied to have a connection with leaky gut has a connection with leaky gut. So if there isn't an autoimmune disease that's connected, it's because it hasn't been studied, essentially.
Exactly.
And That's why I said, like 99%, like you have an autoimmune disease, 99% sure you're going to have a gut problem.
And it's really funny because I think as recent as maybe 5 years ago, there were a lot of doctors that were saying leaky gut's not a thing. And I was like, we have markers for it and we can see, you know, things happen when the gut is not in optimal shape. And are there like actual, you know, people think of like holes. I describe it to my patients as like you know, the thing you drain pasta in, if the holes in that are too big, whether you call that a colander, right? If the holes are too large, your elbow macaronis are going to squeeze through there, but the shells won't, right? It's the same sort of idea where these, you know, lipopolysaccharide or other toxins can squeeze through and end up in places where they're not intended to be. And so what else can squeeze through though? Well, what else is in your gut, right? Partially digested food, bacteria dead and alive, stool. We just don't want any of that stuff outside of the gut, outside of those tubes, supposed to stay in there. So that's a big one with autoimmune diseases for me in relation to gut health is leaky gut. It's just a really common and closely connected situation there. Yeah.
So how do you talk to your clients in a round about healing that leaky gut?
So first I try to eliminate whatever the cause is. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I do a gut test on everyone first thing. So we can see, you know, is there LPS being produced? Are there histamines being produced? What's going on in the gut that is causing leaky gut? Sometimes it's a food like gluten or something else. It's really individual. It depends on the individual as to what the cause of that is.
Can you tell from the...
From the gut test what's contributing? Yes. So I can see like if those certain bacteria are really high, sometimes it's a matter of not that something is there. It's a matter of that not enough of our good bacteria, our commensals are present. Those guys have a really big role in protecting us and keeping our gut environment at the proper acidity so that harmful things can't overgrow. And when there's not enough of the good guys, then we can end up with leaky gut and GI symptoms from simply that fact. It doesn't have to be that there's too much of something, you know, harmful or horrible or so whatever people don't want in there. It could just be a matter of we don't have enough of the good stuff.
Yeah. And so then is it a matter of supplementation or is that kind of your prebiotic foods or, you know,
all of it. Yes. I just try to calm the world down in there. Right. So that is supportive supplements. There's a lot of things on the market that really help to, just soothe the gut lining. L-glutamine is a big one. There's lots of combination products now that are really nice for that. And then, I usually give that, you know, a couple of weeks and I continue that on if there's something that needs to be killed while I'm doing that, or we just boost up, if there's not enough good guys with like what you mentioned with probiotics. I like fermented foods for that a lot and really just, you know, kind of optimize the gut, rebalance things so that we do have our protection system in place and we don't have any of those more harmful organisms present.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's like keeping everything in balance, isn't it? The good and the bad, and the not too much good and not too much bad.
Right. And then all of that will lead to, you know, that happy gut lining where it's not leaky and there's not, you know, too many of those substances that are harming the gut layer. There's even a certain bacteria called Acromantia. It's my favorite. It munches on the layer that's covering the, I know, it's not weird to have a favorite bacteria. So Acromantia munches on, on our, there's a layer of mucin over our gut lining and Acromantia munches on that and in turn creates more of it. And so people that don't have Acromantia often have leaky gut simply for that one. It's not really a one thing. There's usually, you know, other factors involved, but often I'll see people with no Acromantia that are gaining weight, that are, you know, all sorts of things going on metabolically. And then that bacteria is the one that feeds others. And so then those guys are usually low as well. It's really fascinating the connection that all of those organisms has with each other as well.
Yeah. And I suppose unless you're doing a test, you're not going to know those things. Like, is there any other way to work those things out other than that GI stool test? Or
I always say test, don't guess. You know, a lot of people will take the probiotic that they heard about in their Facebook group, and sometimes it works because you just hit on the right thing. But I started out my life as a computer scientist, and I like data. I want to know what's in there. I don't want to guess, and I really want for my patients the fastest recovery possible. I remember what it was like trying to recover my own gut, and kind of the turning point for me was doing a gut test so that I did know exactly what's in there, so I know what to target, right? When somebody has a bloating, I'll just take bloating for example, there can be many reasons. It can be because there's something harmful in there, or it could be because there's not enough of the good guys in there. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know. You just know that you're bloated after every time you eat. A lot of people connect that with food. So they start removing foods from their diet, right? And maybe that works and maybe it doesn't. But so I prefer to test so that we do know exactly what's going on, and we can, you know, use that, the results of that test as our clear path forward as exactly what we need to do.
Well, I guess, as you say too, it makes it, it shortcuts the healing phase. And if you've taken, I'm just trying to think, well, I said before about the seven doctors, I think it's actually 7 years. And in terms of being diagnosed, like, I think it's not seven doctors. I think it's, anyway, there's seven, it was in there, 7 years or seven doctors, or maybe a combination of both. It's certainly a long period of time often people take to be diagnosed and a number of different doctors. But if it's taken you a long time to get to the point where it's like, right, finally I've got some idea of what's going on, now how do I treat it? If you want that to be as effective and efficient as possible, because as exactly. You said before, like, the thyroid meds can take a while, but they're dealing with the two different things. The thyroid meds are dealing with your thyroid hormone. I guess when you're dealing with your gut health and your general autoimmune response, you're talking about the autoimmune side of it, not just the thyroid function side of it, although they interact. So,
exactly.
And we all tend to, I have a theory that there's, you know, a lot of people that have autoimmune conditions are, you know, the type of personalities that want to just get in, get things done, sort it out quick. I want to get on with my life, you know. So probably suits our personalities to, you know, I don't mean shortcut in a bad way, but like, let's just not fluff around. Let's just find out what's going on.
Yeah. That's my personality. I assume that everybody else is like me. So
well, when you're working with people with autoimmune conditions, you're probably largely right. You know.
Right. And people that come, I typically have people that are dealing with symptoms chronically. And I say, you know, 3, 5, 10, 20 years. I have some women in their 70s that have been dealing with, you know, urgent diarrhea for 30 years.
Oh, like, my gosh. How do you live like that? Yeah.
Exactly. And so, well, they're not. They're compensating in all sorts of ways.
So, Donna, one of the things that you said earlier was about absorbing medication. If your gut health's not good, one of the problems you can have is in absorbing thyroid medication in your gut, and therefore not getting the best value out of the thyroid medication, not having the influence on your thyroid hormones that you're wanting to have. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit. You know, what strategies can you use to improve that? You know, what can we do to, I mean, obviously we've got to fix our gut, but what else can we do? We'll be mindful of.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So in the meantime, yes, of course, fix your gut is priority number one. But while you're doing that, what else can we do? Right. So whenever this was my issue, I would let my thyroid meds melt in my mouth, so that my oral microbiome and the tissues in my mouth were doing more of the absorption than I wasn't relying so much on my gut. I mean, I'm still swallowing, right? So I'm swallowing some of it, but not relying solely on the gut. I found that to be relatively beneficial. I don't have, you know, any scientific data to to back that up, but just from my own experience, that's kind of what I felt like worked for me. If you have a capsule where you can't do that, I don't really have a great solution for that. Those people just kind of have to manage it through, you know, swallow it and cross your fingers.
And so, work on your gut.
But that's what I did. Yeah. And I think that that works fairly well to at least let your oral microbiome and your oral cavity tissues there to help out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do that too. I've been doing that for the last couple of years. And I mean, I don't even know. I also wonder, you know, how you're not meant to eat or, you know, eat or drink anything other than water, you know, for an hour or so after you've taken your thyroid medication. And I still do that, but I think that's because of that absorption. You want your thyroid medication to absorb and get into your system. But I also wonder if in just letting it absorb in your mouth, whether you can then eat a little bit far, you know, a bit sooner. I don't know. I think I've waited that hour or so for so many years, 20 something years. I'm happy to still largely do that. But I do wonder if that might mean you can, you know, there's a little bit more flexibility there maybe, too.
Right. That's a really great point. I don't know. Maybe you can fudge that a little bit.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about the mechanism of them. Like, okay, well, what is there an oral shot? What if you could just bypass the gut and the mouth altogether and do, I don't know of any, but, you know, just pondering other ideas to get past if you have a gut issue or the whole eating and drinking thing.
I just figure it's getting into my bloodstream faster. You know, that whole...
Right.
That's what I figure. I mean, I think I read about it in a Facebook post a couple of years ago and I thought, oh, I can give that a try.
Why not?
It works with my thyroid medication. It wasn't specifically because I think I've worked largely on my gut health issues, although gut health goes up and down all the time. So, you know, that adds those challenges. But by and large, I don't think I did it because I was trying to avoid that, but I think, it does. And, it's worked all right for me. Yeah, why not? Yeah. It's worked for me too. So maybe give that a go if you're listening and you can. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So, if you're listening and you haven't given it a try and you have a medication that would allow for that, then, you know, there's food for thought for you. But that's not an excuse to not work on your gut.
No. Exactly.
you definitely still have to work on your gut. So the other thing that you said as part of your story, and I know we've touched on this a little bit, but I think pretty much I'd say the community at large, not just the thyroid community, knows that antibiotics are bad for your gut. I think and I think even within the medical profession now, they're much less likely to prescribe antibiotics than they would have been, say, you know, 20, 30 years ago, or even 10 years ago. And so we're much more mindful, but I still don't know that even though people know that antibiotics kind of wreck your gut, they don't really know what to do about it. You know, how do you actually... what do they actually do? Are they just wiping out everything? And what if you do have to be on antibiotics like you were, and like many people do, the reality is you can avoid them, but sometimes you do have to take them. What do you do then? If you have to, you have to, you know, you want to be alive, you know, what do you do to, you know, then go on a healing journey after that?
So I always tell my patients that are pondering, okay, should I take the antibiotics or not? You know, they are life-saving meds. We would be in terrible shape without them. Sometimes you have to take them and you just have to take them. And we worry about the gut after that, right? For me, I really had no business taking two antibiotics at the same time. My dentist had no business prescribing that. I see that in retrospect, but, you know, at the time when they say, well, you're going to lose your teeth if you like, well, I want my teeth. So, but the me of today would be a little bit, I would question that a little bit more. So there is no dispute that antibiotics disrupt the delicate balance of organisms in our gut, period, end of sentence. How much that impacts someone really depends on a lot of things, what their diet is, what their lifestyle choices are, and what is the status of their gut prior to taking those antibiotics, right? So say that somebody's got a perfect optimal gut and they take antibiotics and they move on with their life. It's not likely that it's going to, you know, decimate things for them. And the other way around, if somebody's got poor gut health, it is more likely that those medications will impact them greatly. But it just is, there's not really a strong correlation with just antibiotics and whether your gut is healthy at the beginning or not. There's just so many factors involved in how strong is the antibiotic, how long are you on it? You know, I have, when my son was younger, he had acne and he went to the dermatologist and they wanted to put him on, I can't remember which antibiotic it was, for 6 months. And I was like, absolutely, you know, no way. You can just have a few, you can just have acne for a while. I'm not putting my son on antibiotics for 6 months for acne. So that's a factor, you know, how long is the course of medication and that type of thing. So, but it is clear that there is disruption. For me, why did that happen? I don't know. You know, I really was in pretty great shape before that, before I took antibiotics and why that, maybe it was a combination of the two of them. I just don't know. So antibiotics can change things in there, and then we might end up with something that exacerbates the problem. For example, maybe you don't produce enough stomach acid now. Maybe you have digestive enzyme changes. Maybe your bile production is altered in some way. So it's just not only the bacteria, but it's the environment as a whole. What all changes based on that? And And a lot of people will end up with diarrhea or constipation, some sort of motility change. And when that happens, it can just begin this whole cascade of sort of the changes that happen with poor motility. I really can't emphasize the importance of having regular bowel movements enough in your overall gut health. Keeping things moving is really important. When you have a slowed down system or, you know, your motility is a little bit slow, you do have more likelihood for that whatever's in your stool or, you know, partially broken down food, whatever it is, all combined in there. It acts as food for harmful bacteria. So slowing everything down, those guys have more of an opportunity to grow. Whenever you speed things up, the other end of the spectrum, you and don't of course, have enough time for nutrient absorption. So you end up kind of on that, you know, end of the spectrum there with your food is moving too quickly. Your body is not getting the nutrients that it needs. So I once had a patient that had 2 to 3 bowel movements per month. Her GI doctor told her that that was just fine per month. Her GI doc said, that's normal. That's fine for you. And I'm just like, no, you know, yikes. She's like leaving this stool in there to just feed and help those harmful bacteria to thrive. So it really is important. And antibiotics can alter that. So what can we do, right? Say that we have to take something and we want to mitigate damage or mitigate any of those things happening, right? I generally recommend a yeast probiotic called Saccharomyces boulardii. If somebody needs to take antibiotics, that's kind of my go-to. Saccharomyces boulardii is really awesome in helping to maintain the overall balance of the gut. And we talked before about how important that balance is. And even though it's a yeast, it doesn't contribute to yeast overgrowth. So it's safe for somebody with candida, but it's really like a nice balancer. It wants everybody to sort of play nicely together. And so it helps sort of root out harmful things and help balance out the good things. So that's usually my go-to. some people just take a general broad spectrum probiotic, and that's, you know, can be helpful as well. It really just depends on the person.
I was going to say, do you recommend taking that after you've finished the course of antibiotics?
Yes.
Or during?
During and after.
During and after.
Yeah, the recovery of the gut can take some time after antibiotics. And some studies show that it can have an impact, that antibiotics can have an impact on our gut up to a year. Again, that depends on the health of the individual's microbiome, everything, you know, prior mm-hmm. to taking medications. Yeah. Yeah. But it can be a long-term recovery to get things back to pre-antibiotic state. And so I just want people to really pay attention to how they're feeling and not just say, well, okay, now I have this symptom or that symptom. I like them to stay on some sort of healing protocol post antibiotics for a period of time until they feel like things are back to normal.
Yeah. 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 I think when you realize that it could have that sort of impact, it does make you think, do I really need these antibiotics?
Yes, exactly.
It's a bit like with gluten when I, you know, read that your body can still be having a negative response to gluten for up to 6 months after one exposure. I'm like, yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. And it's not saying everybody's body has a 6 month, but it's like if it could take up to 6 months, you know, and my body is still responding negatively, even if it's 2 months, even if it's a week after like one, like that just doesn't sound reasonable to me. So that helped me when I was giving up gluten to go, no, oh, actually not worth it. It's just not worth it.
Let's count out 6 months from now, right? Yeah.
That's right.
You make a really great point. Our gut test does check for not celiac disease, but it's gluten sensitivity or gluten intolerance. And it measures protein that's generated to determine if you're responding, if your immune system is responding with inflammation to the presence of gluten in your diet. And so that is what the lab says, is it's 6 months for it to really clear from your system where you don't have inflammation triggered from the gluten you ate 6 months ago, which seems crazy, right? Like I had a bite of a cookie 6 months ago, and now here I am still dealing with the after effects in my gut as far as inflammation goes. But yeah, really, really interesting there. And even more important because we know gluten's got an impact on our thyroid, right? Well, it also has an impact on our leaky gut, whether we have it or not, right? A gluten can be a trigger for a lot of people, especially those Hashi patients. Mm-hmm. But gluten can, if you're sensitive, can lead to leaky gut. And we talked about how leaky gut is impactful in thyroid health. And so just, you know, if it shows up on the test, and it does for a lot of people that come to me, I know that I have a population of people that are dealing with gut and often in thyroid issues as well. But I just have them stop it for a while and then we reintroduce and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes that's at least then you can see a response. You know, when I do my programs, they just cut everything out for 30 days, give your body a good rest from having to process it. And if you really want to reintroduce something, then reintroduce and see how you feel. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really funny. I just did a gut test on my son. He was having some problems and losing weight. That was his big thing. He's a amateur bodybuilder, and his big concern.
Oh, you don't want to be losing weight then.
No, heck no. And so I just got his results back yesterday, and he's got a huge sensitivity to gluten. And he's 20, how old is he? 23. And so he says, well, what happened? I was fine eating it last week. And, you know, that's the usual thing is why now? What's happened now? Actually, his specific issue, and this is not the case with everyone. Sometimes it is celiac disease or, you know, a true immunity or something like that. But for him, he's got certain bacteria overgrown at extremely high levels that those bacteria cause food intolerances, specifically in his case to gluten.
Wow.
So of course, yeah, the question is always, can I go back to eating it at some point, right? Is this forever, right? I don't know if you dealt with that when you started cutting out gluten. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of go through a little bit of a denial, like, this is a really rare. Celiac disease is a really rare. It's probably not me. This is probably not a problem. You eat it, and then you're like, oh, no, I'm dying here. But for people like him, what I said to him was, okay, let's get rid of the bacteria that's causing the problem. And then we can assess, we can add it back in. We'll retest, make sure it's gone. And then we can add gluten back in and see if that's something that you tolerate now, because the initial problem, the cause, the root cause is gone. Right. So, that's the plan, but he was very dismayed to hear that he was not able to eat pizza anymore.
Yeah. Look, I think it's that age. When my oldest son was in, he's now almost 21, so similar, a little bit, couple of years younger. But when he was in his last year of school a couple of years ago, I thought he was showing signs, I thought, of hypothyroidism. And so we had all that checked, and his thyroid function was okay, not great, but okay. And he didn't have the antibodies. He was okay, but we still did a month of, paleo, basically, so gluten, mm-hmm. grain, dairy-free. And it was tough. He kept the gluten-free going for a while, not now, but for a while. And we did discover that he has the celiac gene. I have the celiac gene. I don't have celiac disease. It hasn't triggered, but I have the celiac gene. He has the celiac gene. So I'm like, you're going to have to be careful. You know, you're going to choose to eat it at some point, you know, just if all the other circumstances are right or wrong, you know, it could be a trigger. And so, but and we've had conversations on this podcast. I was talking with Tara Nelson, who's a naturopath here in Australia, about helping children who are diagnosed with Hashimoto's and dealing with dietary changes and how to help kids with that. And it's hard, you know, and boys when they're in their early 20s, like, no pizza, what? How does that work? You know,
right.
I mean, that's a whole separate conversation, but yeah, I feel for you. So I know we've kind of been as a family a little bit through, you know, similar but different kind of, it is hard to help them to understand why they're doing it, how to manage it, and hopefully then to see some impact.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All of that. Yeah. My son has a saying, like, if he wants to do something now and he's just going to worry about the situation down the road, which is really common with a lot of early 20s guys, his name is Sam. And he says, that's future Sam's problem.
Yeah.
So I might eat the pizza now, but that's future Sam's problem down the road as to whether that's going to trigger something. I'm going to have some digestive symptoms. I'm like, that's an interesting way to live. Future
Sam. Problem is, Sam. Future Sam is now here.
Exactly. Okay.
This is actually future Sam's problem now, because future Sam has caught up with current Sam, and here is your problem. I know.
That's
we hear
right.
that too.
That's right. Boys.
The last topic I wanted to cover with you, Donna, if that's okay, is just talking a bit about parasites, because you hear a lot about parasites and do a parasite cleanse and, you know, or don't do it, leave them there, they're good, they're bad, you know, like, I know this is a whole big topic on itself, but in terms of parasites, in a general sense, like, how do you know if you've got them? What do you do if you do? Talk to us a little bit about parasites.
So parasites are really interesting. Nobody wants them. Whenever I'm running through the results of the gut tests with my patients, we get to the parasite section and I hear an audible sigh of relief if there's nothing there. And I say, you have no parasites. It's just, we have this mental image of like these giant worms or whatever, you know, living in there. And that can be the case. Often they're, you know, very small microscopic bugs, but nobody wants them. So parasites, a lot of people think that they're a third world problem, not something that those of us in developed nations need to be concerned about, or, you know, really, there are not problems here. A lot of doctors will tell their patients, well, we're not testing for that because it's not common here. But the truth of the matter is they're in third world countries and they're here as well. So a couple years ago, I was swimming in a lake nearby and we're in a terrible drought, have been for a number of years. Our lake is down probably 60 feet. So I was swimming, racing Sam across our little cove, and I swallowed some water. Ended up with Giardia and Endolimax nana, two parasites, one of them nasty. So it's prevalent. People get it a lot from foodborne or water in a lake, or whether you are drinking water in, whether it's in third world country or whether it's just somewhere where there's Giardia. Normally, water treatment plants treat for Giardia. It's that common. So when people have acute symptoms, it is very noticeable. It's diarrhea. It's particularly foul-smelling stool. It's stomach cramps and gas and dehydration. Parasites are active more at night. A lot of people will wake up for no reason and be agitated. Some people think it's food poisoning, but it is present in, gosh, probably a third of my patients.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. So parasites, we all know they live off of the host, right? And so how do we treat them, or what do we do about them? Some of them are problematic, like Giardia, the one that I had. They make little, they encapsulate themselves, their little eggs, into something that's called a cyst. And those can stay on lettuce leaves. Those can stay on your apple skins. Those can stay. And then you eat whatever the food is or drink the water. And there you go. You've got some parasites going on. They can be persistent depending on which ones you have present, what else is in your gut, how well your gut is positioned to fight them off. there are herbal treatments for those. There are pharmaceutical treatments. Sometimes the herbals are not enough to get rid of them. When you see parasites, hold on. Can you hear me still? Can you hear me still?
Yeah.
Okay. I just lost that earbud. So when you have parasites, you can treat them with pharmaceuticals such as antibiotics or antifungals or antiparasitics. But you could also do the herbal route for those guys, depending on what, like I said, what else is going on in your system. If you've got a strong gut, it's just the parasite. Usually herbals will knock them out. It's a simple, like you mentioned, a parasite cleanse. Does everyone need to do a parasite cleanse? I don't think so. They can be... cleanses contain antimicrobials. Antimicrobials don't just kill the harmful organisms. They kill some of the beneficial ones as well. So I wouldn't do that just as a general rule. If you do have food poisoning, or you think that it's food poisoning, or the symptoms that I mentioned, I would just get a test. You can do a stool test. I found this lab, this guy, I think he's in his 70s. That's been doing microscopic analysis of stool and urine for parasites. And he's got this system where he's, you know, tested three times. He has certain stains that he uses that makes parasites show up differently. And so he's what I do if I have somebody that's done a gut test, treated parasites, goes on 6 months later, their symptoms aren't gone. Things are just a little stubborn. I send them to his lab, and we see what's really mm-hmm. going on in there. So okay. You know, they're common. But should somebody do a cleanse regularly? I wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good advice, because it's, I suppose it's a bit like that test, don't guess. You know, if you don't have a problem, don't create a problem.
right.
But yeah, I think sometimes when we follow a lot of health pages, like probably you and I do, and people who are trying to get a hold of what's going on for them, it's easy to go, oh, should be doing this, oh, I should be doing that, and you end up down these different rabbit holes. And I think parasite cleanses can be one of those things that people think, oh, maybe I should just do that. Do I have a parasite? You know, maybe I should just go do a cleanse. So I think that's good advice, is don't, you know, you don't have to go running down every rabbit hole that you come across. Yeah. And it probably.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also probably a good example of where it's important to work with a practitioner. And so I think then you're not just stabbing in the dark, trying to figure it all out on yourself with the help of Google, which helps a lot. But there are times when it is really important to be working with a practitioner that knows what they're doing and can actually help you give specific advice for what you're going through. So, yeah.
Right, right. It's funny on some of the Facebook groups, and people will talk about what, you know, giant worm came out in their parasite cleanse, which is horrifying. But most of the, those are worms, but most of the protozoa are actually, you can't see them. And I know that people that do parasite cleanse, you want to see something. You're like, okay, well, I see them coming out, so I feel like I'm getting better, right? But most of the time you can't see them. So yeah, I think
it's gross.
Doing it when you need to do it is a better route than just, you know, blindly cleansing.
Donna, I'm wondering, I mean, you're obviously working with clients. I know you've got your Gut Fix program. Do you want to tell us a bit about how clients can work with you, the way you work with clients, what you offer? Give yourself a bit of a promo in case anyone is listening and has some gut issues and they'd like to work with you to resolve them. What should they do and how do they connect with you?
Sure. So I have a website. There are tons of information on there. It is evervitalnutrition.com. I'm also on Instagram. That's about the only places that I really hang out. So there's information on getting started. Usually what I do is, I mean, unless somebody is like, get me started right now, I don't want to talk to you, just order my test, which has happened. But I do offer a complimentary consultation just to make sure that I can, you know, fix what ails you, that we work well together, all of that. I think that's really important in the communication part of things, is to just make sure that, you know, the practitioner and the patient work well together. And so I do offer that. That's available on my website as well. And so that's usually the first route, is people schedule a call, we chat a bit, see what's going on. I don't deal with physical obstructions or, you know, the physical things. That's for a GI doc to contend with, but I do take care of the bacterial and functioning part of the gut microbiome itself, you know, those types of things. And so that's people with IBS, which we could do a whole podcast on what I think about the diagnosis of IBS, but IBS and SIBO and, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of things, parasites, of course. Any of those overgrowths that are problematic, or even like I mentioned earlier, the absence of the good guys is equally as important.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I will make sure that we're fully linked to you. So, if you're listening, you know, all of the show notes, everything have their links to your website and to your social media. And so, I want to say thank you, Donna, for your time. Thank you for sharing your experience and giving us that refresher about lots of different aspects of gut health. I've really appreciated having you on from Austin, Texas, and I can let you go and have your Friday night now. You can go relax and have your Friday night. So thank you for joining us on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, that's a pleasure. So for those that are still listening, I want to say thank you very much for listening. And you'll know that usually at the end of the show, I do like a bit of a coaching segment. I think what I want to do is just say, have a think about, do you have any gut issues? And do you actually then need to go and talk to someone like Donna or a local health practitioner and actually get some testing done so that you, you're not just floundering around. But yeah, always I like to say, just pick one thing that you can do as a result of the conversation and investigate it. Do it, go talk to someone about it, but take some action. That's how you're actually going to get benefit out of these podcasts. So thanks everyone, and we'll see you on the next show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Thyroid. If you have enjoyed the content, or perhaps you're thinking, oh, my mum needs to hear this, or my sister or my bestie, I would love it if you would share this episode with them. That really just helps spread the positive and practical message of Let's Talk Thyroid and helps that broader thyroid community, our friends and family, to live well with their thyroid health. So you can just, yeah, share the episode. If you subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast, it's free. It's really helpful because then you'll be notified every time a new podcast comes out, and it just makes it much easier to find. There's usually a little subscribe button or a bell or a follow, often is the terminology. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, that would be helpful. Of course, if you want to leave a review, even better, just a sentence or two about how the podcast has helped you. You can definitely connect with me via letstalkthyroid.com. That's where you'll find access to my book, my coaching, my freebies, and really everything that I offer in terms of thyroid support. So thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye. Have you read Let's Talk Thyroid yet? That is the book that I put out last year. It is all about positive and practical thyroid help for the new thyroid patient, or for the thyroid patient that is new to the idea that there's anything other than taking your medication that you can do for your thyroid health. Grab your copy from Amazon or from my website, letstalkthyroid.com, or grab a copy for a friend who is struggling with their thyroid health and just needs some really accessible, bite-sized, practical, and positive information that's going to give you hope for your thyroid future.